Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
Teachings in the air. Welcome to Teachings in the Air podcast with Jerry Oldman. Coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit, because that's what health means.
This is Jerry Oldman from Teachings in the Air. This is segment 2 of the Ceremony Over Distance podcast.
Okay, maybe we can get some questions if there's...
We have an avalanche of questions out there, I'll start listing them off here. So one of the first ones is a little bit more specific, and it comes from Janet, and she says, "Good morning, Jerry. You spoke of chewing on bitter roots." Janet just wants to know what is that specifically.
Bitter root. I get it from the Northern Cree people, you know, and this is where I talk about my love for bitter root, but to say I've never harvested it. So I've never seen them take it. But I have bitter root here and I chew it. And that's where my... At first I used to think it's just for singers, people that are singing. You know, and I'd use that for singing. And also I feel it helps my, you know, the phlegm lining in my throat throughout my lungs. It keeps it clear. You know, just like mullein does that too. It dissolves phlegm in your lungs if you're getting accumulation there. That it keeps that clear, bitter root or rat root, I call it rat root. And so I chew on that. And the main part is because I had the walking pneumonia before. So I want to keep my lungs clear. Because before, you know, I was just like almost like a smoker. You could hear me cough once in a while, like a phlegmy cough. But I use that medicine. It's not there. Yeah.
Awesome.
That bitter root that I'm talking about, there's some called bear root and bitter root, rat root. The ones that I know come from the water lily root. So you have to get it in the water. There's another root that I use that I got from the Okanagan. I think the only time they dig it is in the nighttime. Or if they're digging in the daytime, they cover themselves with a blanket to dig the root out. You know, but I use that as a tea too to help. Another really good one is chaga, and it's to help with anti-inflammatory. And I take that now when I get flare-ups of, I had gout, and I used that, and it's anti-inflammatory. And it's off the birch tree, you know, that part that grows off the birch tree. Really good medicine.
Awesome. Thanks, Jerry. So we have another question here. What can we do to celebrate the hard work of frontline health workers to show appreciation from afar? And I think we kind of talked about a little bit about that, hey, about ceremony and sending good energy when possible. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that, Elder?
Well, I feel that this statement, the more the merrier, is to get people involved with you. Like I know on Vancouver Island in Victoria at 7 o'clock every night, there's people outside banging pots and pans, workers. You know, when I heard that, I got tears in my eyes. I said, oh my gosh. Then I seen the police cars and stuff in St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver going by with their lights flashing, their sirens on, giving thanks to the frontline workers. And I feel we can do this. Like if you get a Facebook group of friends or whatever, and you start drawing posters or you start singing together, chanting together, and let everyone know it's around you, this is for the frontline workers. Because even if the frontline workers don't hear you, my belief is that they'll feel it when it's sincerely coming from you and your group. You know, every bit of energy you put out is not wasted. It travels. So my hope is that more and more of us do ceremony, for instance, that we sit down, we light a candle or the smudge or in front of a bowl of water or, you know, and send energy to the healers. Because the doctors and nurses are healers. And the ones that are looking for the cure, they're healers. Send energy to them. But I really encourage you to, even if it's just two of you, say, okay, let's go outside. We're going to sing a song for frontline workers. Then announce it, and then go out and do it. That would help.
Awesome. Thank you, Jerry. So for everybody that's following along, we have many questions, and I'll try to get as many of them as I can. We're just going to go through them here.
Jim Herbert raised his hand, whoever that. I see that in my screen.
Yeah. So we have a question from Cher. She says, many thanks for lifting us up and sharing your teachings. I wonder how I, as a non-Indigenous person, can support my graduate students to find medicines to make their spirits strong during this difficult time. So, as a non-Indigenous person, how could Cher support her Indigenous graduate students during this time to find medicine and be strong?
You know, that medicine doesn't know color. And every medicine that comes out of the earth is for a human being. And the big thing that stops us from using natural medicines for Indigenous people is that at the very beginning of our contact with Europeans, it was identified as a devil's tool, the medicines that we're using. And so I really appreciate that question, because the biggest way she can do it is say, I believe and what your people used. So I encourage you to go back to it. Find out how to use it, how to harvest it, where to get it. If you can trade for it, trade for it. But start to use it sincerely. It's like the sweet grass, you know, or the sage or the juniper. To me, juniper is a magnet for negativity. So when I burn juniper, it's to get negativity out of my mind or out of my body, or to protect me from negativity, to make a shield against negativity. So I tell this to nurses and doctors, you know, and I say, you know, when you go work with Indigenous people, you tell them that what we used before was effective, that you believe that. Because we're very healthy people before contact. Very healthy, strong in our mind, body, and spirit. To know that men in the plateau were running down moose on foot and slicing their tendons with a sharp razor-sharp piece of flint to feed the people. To do that, you have to be very healthy. To know that people on the West Coast were hunting whales off canoes made without metal, that person is very healthy. To walk up the mountain and come back with tons of berries for the winter, those people were healthy. You know, but what we got, the assimilation process, was to get, absorb us into civilized European lifestyle. Some will argue it wasn't civilized, but I know there was civilness in there amongst themselves, but we got excluded. But we're not anymore. There's no law that stops us anymore. But I really encourage white Canadians or people that aren't from Canada to support Indigenous people and let them know, you know what, if you do that, I don't have any kind of negative feeling to you or anything. Just please do it because I know it works for you. It'll work for them too.
Awesome. Thank you for those words, Elder. I appreciate it. So our next question from Peter. Do you believe at this time of the virus, that we are able to raise up with our ceremony? And I think what Pete's asking here, Peter is asking is, given how much time that we have for introspection, because we're all self-isolating, is it time for all of us to kind of reconnect and try to place the importance of ceremony into our lives again?
Yeah, yes, I believe that this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for people to start to learn their language. Like I've been telling families, you know, half an hour every day, get auntie or uncle to phone you and put them on speakerphone and start to have them speak the language and start to learn it. You know, like there's teachings in that language. I could just hear my grandmother, ah, squishakalut apa. She's telling me in her grandmother voice, don't you say bad words to people, son. She's saying, because that will hurt us. It'll hurt you eventually if you use bad words against people, because they're going to come back at you. You know, so we can start to, I'm so happy about this webinar because it's about ceremony. And my dream is that we all start to ceremony again when we have a glass of water, when a baby's born. You know, in times of funerals and things that we ceremony together and we feel it. For a ceremony to be real, for me, means we must feel it. It's not a walkthrough. We're participating. We're active participants and we feel it. Even if we're just sitting there listening, we open ourselves up to feel it. And I think this is we can do that now by having webinars like this, listening to other elders talk about the importance of this ceremony. The assimilation was so brilliant. Because in 1965, I'll pick 65, there was not one hand drum song being sung in my community. Not one. It wasn't until 1976 that they start to come out again. Maybe a little bit earlier, when they say the eagle landed on the moon, people started picking up our ways again. You know, so I feel that now is the time, because we can talk to our children with their creation stories, how to train stories, that we can do this now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you, Elder. Sorry about that. So, okay, another question. So Jane asks, I have adopted the smudging practices to help my wellness and red road of healing, but I have been criticized for using another cultural teaching. I was not always connected to my cultural roots, have lived away from my family, community, and ceremony practices, as so many of us have been thanks to the efforts of colonization. Also, I was working on my broken spirit and the hurt my community had contributed to my brokenness. I found other teachings to help heal my spirit, What do you have to say to others in a similar situation as my experience? So I think to kind of paraphrase what Jane's saying here is that she utilizes smudging and other teachings on her own kind of internal road to wellness. And she just wanted your feedback on that, Elder.
Yes. You know, I've been to communities where people say, oh, our people didn't smudge. You know, and I know that's a problem, gets to be a problem, you know, because of our different lifestyles. Like some of us, some people are on the ocean. Some people are in the plateau, in the mountains, and some are in the prairies. You know, we all come, and one of my elders said, the language changes with the vegetation. Things change depending where you're at. But, you know, like, if we look at smudging as a religion, I can see how people can criticize you. But I say, don't look at it as a religion. Look at it as a way of nourishing your spirit. And you'll use whatever works for you. And I encourage you to do that. I use sweetgrass today, and my people then use sweetgrass in Seton Lake, my community. But I still use sweetgrass because it works for me. I call it the kindness medicine. If I feel a little negative, I'll light sweetgrass, I'll smell it. Oh, I start to feel better already. You know, so I know this appropriation business, this word is out there. You know, and one of the elders from up Northwest Territory said, he was in one of my podcasts, and he says, well, Mighty, he says, if you're drowning in a river and you don't like white Canadians, when they throw you a life ring, are you going to bat it away? You know? Of course not. You're going to grab it because you want to live. Doesn't matter who throws it. To me, the spirit has no color. The medicines don't know color. The smudging is strengthening you. By all means, I say anyone do it. I believe all cultures in the world would burn something to get the medicine out of it. When I'm burning sage, if I just use sage, for me it's for my body to open it up to release things like cold and stuff like that. Juniper is about negativity. Fungus is for my brain, for my spirit. There's different, like I say, there's medicines for everything in our body, including our spirit and the earth. So how can someone deny you from using medicine that's going to help you is my question. And from my view, those people got a small view, narrow view. And it sort of almost sounds sanctimonious, like holier than thou, you know. And I know we're all susceptible to that. You know, we can turn on each other really quickly. In 1976, I started, 78, I started using Sweat Lodge, my own. I built my own. And the church and the priest that used to come to our community said, there's someone here who wants to go back to the old ways. And he says, that's not our way. You're now following Christ. So I discourage that. And I went up to my sweat lodge the next day and somebody fell a tree on my sweat lodge. So we can turn against each other, even as Stetlium people or Cree people or Anishinaabe. But to me, how you nourish your spirit is not my business. I am willing to share with you how my spirit gets nourished. But if you find a way and it works for you, I got no right to criticize you. In fact, I'll be happy for you because you're doing it consistently. You're sincere. Yeah. This part sort of gets me upset sometimes when I hear people criticizing people for using medicine. That helps them.
Yeah. Yeah, ultimately our journey inward and everything that comes along with that, it is deeply personal, right? Doesn't really matter how you get there. What matters is if it works for you. Thank you, Elder. Mm-hmm. So we're switching gears a little bit here, and we have a question from Priscilla. And Priscilla says, I coordinate the elders in residence program at Aboriginal Health, so Vancouver Coastal Health. Many of our elders are eager to get back to supporting our community and our various clinics. How can I support them as they transition into providing virtual care and support? What considerations should I take or should I make? So I think, like, generally, what would you suggest to other elders that are looking to still provide that wisdom and that knowledge, and even just providing their presence to people in this time when they can't physically be there? What would be your words of advice to other elders?
My word of advice is to reach out, is let people know, you know, that realistically what you can share. But some elders, you know, they're really hurting. You know, they got arthritis, they got whatever. But to let people know, you know, I'll give you an example. If they say, listen, I'm willing to tell stories for a half an hour a day. I know lots of stories if they're a storyteller, to reach out. And I'd also encourage elders, and I think a lot of them would be okay with this, is to allow yourself to be videotaped telling an elder a story, creation story. Because I tell stories, I love telling stories. And I tell people, you know, my TV and radio when I was a small child was my grandmother telling stories. You know, we didn't have what we have today. You know, and I remember those with such fondness. You know, the stories. So I think if elders have stories and knowledge to share, they find one person to say, listen, can you let the people know I'm willing to do this? Because they're not going to be found on their own. You have to send, I think we need to send a message out that, hey, I want to teach. I started doing that. I got people now that I talk to about how to do things. You know, I was at Summer Science with you guys last year, and I was wanting to teach how to build a sweat lodge. Because I say, you know, this could not only be a sweat lodge, it could be a dwelling, it could be a place for smoking salmon. There's many uses you can do to learn how to build a structure. You know, and I, as an elder, I want to do that. I think it'll be, you know, we changed with society. We can't help it. We're overwhelmed. But I know good workers, working with some elders in Broadway in Vancouver. They were in the center. So I go and learn hand drum songs and sing for the elders. But they would tell me stories too. It was a give and take. But the reason that happened is because that young woman that was working with him heard me speak and said, can you come talk to our elders? I said, sure, because I was a young elder then. You know, I want to hear these elders are, to me, they're real elders. And sure enough, there were there. They could tell me stories about ceremonies. One guy says, I'm composing music for a potlatch. I go, whoa. So I sit with him. You know, and so sometimes they need a guide, a young person. That goes out for them and say, look for students for them or whatever it is, you know, and that's what that young woman was for me. She heard me and said, can you come? And she would give me a gift, you know, and I go talk to those elders once a week. And we'd have a wonderful lunch. She was a perfect person for elders. You know, elders, sometimes they get cranky and they get, you know, because they ache, you know, and stuff like that. And they can't move like they used to. And she would just sort of laugh it up or, you know, push it away and say, oh, come on, eat. You know, I'm going to fatten you up. You're getting too skinny. She'd say, talk like that to some of the elders. You know? And they would come and eat. This relationship building is important. There's a thing called ageism now. We can see it with the coronavirus. Like the elders are put away somewhere. And some saying they're not taken care of well. They're not treated like a treasure. And I can see that. But also some of them would have never survived that long if that center wasn't there. They are getting help. Maybe it's not top quality help, but us as families, we need to go in there and help too when the coronavirus isn't here. You know, because it's like I see that with our kids with the education. So, okay, you guys teach our kids for 12 years. Then we don't teach them. That's wrong, because I fell into that. My parents fell into that. You know, we must take responsibility to help the elders feel purposeful. Say, oh yeah, if you could even tell one story, that'd be good. Or if you know about medicine, or whatever it is you want to share, as long as it's positive. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Elder. So to kind of to sum that up, I guess, you know, elders need support. They need a helper of some kind. They need to have a relationship in place to do that work. And particularly when we're talking about transitioning to a virtual space, you would suggest elders be very upfront with what they could and could not do over that medium to make sure that everybody feels good about participating in that circle, in that dialogue, or whatever it looks like. For me, it's a circle here, but it could be different in different communities, right?
Yes, because everybody's energy is different.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know when I get to be 85, my energy is not going to be like today.
You never know.
I might even start to get younger. I don't know. I'm working at it.
Keep doing that yoga. You'll be younger than I am soon.
And my kata.
Yeah. Awesome. So we have one or two more questions before we run out of time here. So this one is a good question from Gail. Thank you for sharing your thoughts, Elder Jerry. Ceremony is so important for our healing that was taken away due to the negative effects of residential school and intergenerational trauma. Gail's question is, Indigenous women already were facing high rates of family violence before COVID-19 came into effect. And now women may be locked down with their abuser with nowhere to go, limited resources, and many places are closed. How can Indigenous women and children find a way out of this dark place if they are stuck in a bad situation? Do you have any wise words, kind words for that?
Yes, when this started, my mind got a little panicky.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know this is real, you know, like murdered, missing Indigenous woman, violence against women, it's very real. And I'm so sad it's happening. You know, and... But to be, it's easy for me to say be empowered. You know, but the one thing I say is what my elder told me. He says, Jerry, if someone steps on you and you don't make noise, they're going to keep stepping on you. So the thing to find is the right noise. Who do you talk to about this? You talk to the ones that know how to handle this. As Indigenous people, we tend to mistrust professionals because of residential school in the 60s scoop and, you know, Indian hospitals, all of that. We tend to not trust professionals. But we must start to, I think, like my granddaughters and daughters, they must make noise if they're being abused. To me or to someone else that can do something. If we just make noise to people that can't do anything, it doesn't change. You know, this is one of the saddest things to me. I've seen it in my life. I was 5 or 6 years old, and I see my auntie getting beaten. And nobody's raised a hand to stop my auntie from getting beat up. I see her face swell up. Traumatized me. I call it the crazy new way of life for Indigenous people. That never used to happen, in my view.